about Fawlty Towers.
No, not at all.
So at one time you didn't used to... Like...
I just couldn't watch Fawlty Towers because the waiter used to drive me mad. And I used to go, oh! And I was going through the episodes on the television as they were happening. I just couldn't watch it. I can watch it now and laugh and think it's funny because I'm not connected.
It is rather like real life, though, at times. It really is.
Because the thing is, being in hotel life is a bit like play acting because you're saying one thing to your guests, you've got one face to your guests, and you're thinking all sorts of things inside, you know. And I mean, like Sybil in that would go and rant and rave, or he would go and rant and tear his hair out. And you did it. You used to go in the back sometimes and go berserk, didn't you, away from the guests?
Yes.
You were saying what people used to say on the promenade. Was there quite a good camaraderie between the different houses, or did people not have time? Or
well, you didn't really have a lot of time, but I mean, we used to meet them in the winter time, or they used to come to your functions and things. Mm-hmm. But I mean, we had quite a few friends on there in the couples.
In the train, then
our children, we met quite often through our children's activities, you know, because there was a great dancing boom then. Ballroom dancing was very, I mean, the palace was going, beautiful ballroom there. And you had a lot of guests who came over. Mm. And a lot of the guests used to be very pleased when we used to see our daughter all dressed up to go ballroom dancing, you know. Oh, how lovely, you know.
Was there an association, an official association?
Yes, there was.
Mm.
I don't know whether it's still going, is it? It wasn't the one it is now.
I know.
Did they used to do anything particular, or was it just for welfare or campaigning, the lobbying? I mean, that's a modern word.
I think I only ever went to one meeting of the association, and that was when they were going on about the fire regulations, because everybody was so put on when they suddenly said, you know, you've got to spend this and that, because it was a lot of money you had to spend for the fire.
You said you remembered the day Summerland happened.
Yes.
Can you tell me a bit about that?
It was a Thursday evening, and Kim had been dancing. And she was dancing in Derby Road, and I'd gone down to pick her up. My brother was staying with us, and we came back along the promenade about 7 o'clock, I would think. And she said, oh, look, Mummy, there's smoke over there. And I said, oh, yes, somebody must have set some rubbish alight in the goods yard.
The tram yard.
So we didn't think anything else of it, parked the car, took her into the hotel, and then for some unknown reason, I went out into the lounge, because the lounge at the Metropole is all like a veranda.
Glass.
And it went. And as it went, I ran back into our lounge and said to my brother, there's a terrible fire. And because I hadn't realised that it was Auriglass, and I hadn't realised that, you know, that it would go up like it did. And he came with his camera and took it. I've got the slide there of it just as it went up. And from then on, it was all hell let loose. And the fire brigade was there very, very quickly. And our hotel people were running out. And of course, they came into our hotel while I was down in the reception for part of the time. And it was all hands to the pump, just trying to sort out who everybody was and what was going on. And people were so distressed, and it was just bedlam all night, wasn't it?
It was, but the island pulled together very well. There was people, actually, manned crossroads, so there...
Oh, yes.
The ambulances could get through. They literally acted as policemen.
Well, you said to me at some time in the night, it was getting a bit hairy, I don't know what I did with the children, but we had phone calls from across because they'd seen it on the 9 o'clock news, and they wondered if we were all right. But the trouble was, it wasn't... Anybody from any hotel could have been in there. You know, it was an open... So
were any of your visitors involved?
Well, we didn't find out until the following morning because what we did in the evening, Gordon said to me, take the car and go down and see. They were asking for blood donors then. So I got out of the hotel and left you. Mm. You were sort of managing there on your own, well, with the assistant manager. And I took the car and... It was fantastic because you went straight from the promenade all the way along to Crelands Hill, right up Crelands Hill, through all the traffic lights, no traffic lights, just right the way through to Noble's Hospital. And I mean, it was just incredible, the stream of people that were going with blood donors there. And then they said they didn't want any more. And we had people ringing up. I mean, our office was, once it had gone out on the 9 o'clock news, and the receptionists were in panic, and they didn't know who was in the hotel. So we got a list of all the guests' names. I got them to write out a list of the guests' names so that when people rang up, but we had to keep saying, well, we're sorry, we've no idea, we can't tell you. We've no idea. But give me your number, and when they come in, we'll get them to ring you. But of course, you had an awful job trying to get people to identify people coming in when they came for the keys and things, because the place was just heaving with people from outside.
So you would be helping with looking, giving sort of what would tea or helping people come.
Yes.
Taking it, because you're so, you were close.
We were very, very close. We did what we could. Anyhow, through the night, and we got no sleep because there was helicopters and planes and all sorts of things coming over, taking aerial photographs and what have you. But about 11 o'clock, I went through to the hospital and asked them if they wanted any blankets or anything, if they were all right. Well, everything had calmed down a bit by then, and it was all quiet. So what we did the next morning, I was awake through the night because the papers kept ringing up, and the porters couldn't answer the questions, so they called me down to the phone, and they wanted to quote you and all sorts. Well, they never give a true story in the paper. It's always very exaggerated. And they said, well, can we give us your name, and, you know. And, of course, in the meantime, unfortunately, because I wasn't always on reception, the receptionists didn't realise they were getting bookings for people to come and stay, and they were reporters. Well, I wouldn't have had them in the building. I wouldn't have had them. But because I wasn't there, they'd come in. So the following morning, what we did, we gave an announcement over the tannoy and said, we've made a list of everybody's room number. Will you please come to the reception and sign in? So everybody came and signed against the name, and we hadn't anybody who was in it. So we were very, very lucky.
We were lucky, in actual fact.
Very lucky. But it was...
I know I heard one reporter reporting on the telephone to his paper, and what I saw and what he saw were two completely different
things. Yes, it was all... It was. I mean, some of the reports were dreadful, and there was one particular photograph I'll never forget as long as I live. And it was a blackened silhouette sitting on a stairway, and, you know, sort of showing the results of that. And I thought, that's somebody's family. You know, why have they printed that? It was the most distasteful picture.
So you could see the people running about in Summerland against the flames. The only time there was people coming down a prom from Summerland. The only time I've seen expression on people's faces like, or the same type of expression, was when you see the old films of the refugees in the war. People had the same type of expression on their face.
Because nobody knew where anybody was. That was the trouble. And, you know, people were running around.
A lot of people had
children. And I mean, I always
there.
Said to my children afterwards, if you're ever in a building and it goes on fire, get out. You know, don't look for the other person. Just get yourself out. That was quite funny, that day when our fire alarm went off in the morning at the Metropole,
yes.
And the head waiter went back. What did he go back for?
He went back. I saw him going, what are you going back in the hotel for? He said, your wife's still in there. He said, no, me wallet.
Oh dear.
get me their holiday back. 7:30 in the morning, and we'd everybody in the pyjamas
out on the
grass.
Did the guests take it in a good humour generally?
Yes, they thought it was quite.
They thought it was quite funny actually. It was a smoker. What was it? Something went off in the kitchen.
The porter. We got him to light
the
hot plates and the salamander for breakfasts, and he had done his normal job and hadn't switched on the extract fan, so the heat built up and set the fire alarm off.
My daughter was one of the first down the stairs with her brother in her arms.
Yes,
and. She got out to the front, didn't she?
Yeah.
And then she didn't want to go to school because she said she was in shock. I said, take a couple of aspirins and go to school. You know? She was the first down the stairs with him.
Yeah, very quick.
Yeah.
Mm. So no, I think it made the holiday. It gave them something to talk about for ages.
Yeah, bit of something interesting.
Yes.
I'm trying to see if there's anything else. Normally try and run down. talked about almost everything here, actually. Oh, yes, did you see... I know some of the boarding houses traditionally had quite fierce hours for locking the door in the evening. Now, was that something that happened at the Empress, or... and?
No. I think they locked the door, but both were big enough to have a night porter on duty, which meant that there was access and egress at any time of night.
And we didn't have a key on a piece of string hanging out of the window like a lot of them used to.
Did they do that?
Oh, yeah.
Oh gosh, yeah. Yes.
Some even put them in, so had a piece of a nail just inside the door. You put your hand in through the thing, got the piece of string, pull the thing out.
There was one at wherever we went for an interview. We didn't get the job, but they said that the manageress had a piece of string and dropped it down to the guest when they came in at the bottom of the door. But
she'd like throw it out the window or something.
Yes, and identify the person and then drop the key out of the window on a piece of string. But we, by the time we moved into our own guest house, we let them all have a front door key.
We gave them a key and a front door key.
I mean, they used to charge them deposits on keys and things, but we didn't do that.
No,
we can't. The trouble is, it's not a job, it's a way of life. And it's 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 52 weeks of the year, unless you go away. And you can't go at that pace because everybody else is on holiday and they're wanting longer hours. You can't do that. And we never had the sort of thing where you had supper at a certain time. Because you'd see people going out of the theatre at 10 o'clock. Everything had to finish at 10 so they could go back and get their supper because it was included.
I remember telling my daughter, she was in one of the ones at the Gaiety, and I said, you know what will happen? I said, if you're after 10 o'clock, he said, you'll see the people getting up and leaving, because if they don't get to their hotel by 10 or just after, they don't get the tea and biscuits. She thought I was joking. Apparently a quarter of the people got up, about 5 to 10 and walked out.
Well, what we used to do quite often was leave a couple of flasks, didn't we? Coffee and tea.
In the guest house.
In the guest house and let them.
But also in the guest house we did, we didn't do the normal plate service apart from breakfast. We always used to put the meat onto the plates and put the veg into a dish and let people help themselves. So it meant that quite often you were getting veg back that was perfectly usable again.
It was a better,
much better
quality control affair, wasn't it?
Yeah. You were just talking about the strain of the sort of, you know, the lifestyle. Did you or any of your friends sort of know people who went under the strain and their health suffered at all?
Yes, of course.
Yes.
We've suffered with it.
Yes, definitely. I have friends not over here, surprisingly enough, but I have friends that actually became alcoholic because of the trade.
And marriages don't very often last. It's a terrific strain on a marriage. Ours didn't last. But
yeah, forgive me for touching on a sensitive subject.
Because you can't keep that pace of life up. You just can't do it.
And because you were both in the same trade with the same problems, as you said earlier.
Mm.
You didn't argue about yourselves, you argued about the business.
And all your time, and your children grew up, and it's a shame for the children, really.
Didn't have enough time to spend with them.
It's
a very, very greedy trade on time.
And the guest always comes before your family, so you always had to put the guest first. So our children have not had a normal sort of a life, have they, really?
You consider the metropole when we're in the winter. I'd be up at about 7:30, 7:45 to 8 to let workmen in that were working. I'd then work usually until lunchtime. After lunch I used to try and get a break, but you used to find that's when the people used to come to order the functions and discuss the functions. So quite often you'd be with somebody from 2 o'clock till 4:30, 5 o'clock. You'd go up, get washed and changed and come down again because there's a function on.
So unlike the guest houses, I suppose you were in a trade that was perhaps a little more secure financially, but because you had all year round operation, you didn't have the break. Would that be fair to say that?
Didn't get any break sometimes. And that, if you're working those sort of hours and for a long period of time, it's very, very difficult both on yourself and your family, because you're inclined to get irritable, grumpy.
You get tired, you're tired, you're physically tired. I mean, both our health has suffered because of the trade that we've been in, but you accept that as being that trade. I wouldn't go into it now. I mean, I go into hotels now and think, thank goodness I'm not in it anymore. But it brought us a reasonable sort of a living. It was the living that I married into. So, you know, I don't know what I'd have done if I hadn't.
Oh, I can I just ask, what did both your parents do, just for background information?
Well, my father was in the Royal Navy. And my mother was a naval officer's wife. And then she was a domestic towards the end of her life after he died. You know, She'd never had a trade, because in those days a woman didn't have a trade. You see, it was only sort of, I mean, even when I wanted to stay on at school, my father turned around and said, oh no, she'll marry and have a family, she'll never have to work. But there again, I was of the era when it was beginning to change, and a wife of a manager in particular is expected to work. I mean, it wasn't a case of, well, we employ him and not his wife. You were expected to be employed as a joint management. So at the time when my father said that, the change was coming when a woman was expected to work.
So have you worked, your very first job, was that in the sort of guest house hotel?
No, I went into an electrical showroom as a shorthand. I was a shorthand typist. I did shorthand typing at school. And I went in as their sort of showroom help and sort of doing all their accounts and things. So it was only in 1960 I came over to the Isle of Man on holiday and loved it, and decided that I would like to come back. And the only trade I could think of to go in was the hotel trade. And one of our neighbours used to come over to the island, and my mother said, she's not going, you know, she'll get into white slave traffic over there. And this lady said, oh, I don't think so. She said, well, I'll give you the address of the Social Security office, which was on Books Road then, opposite the House of Keys. And I wrote, and they said, yes, the Empress wants a receptionist. Write to them. And the head receptionist just wrote back and said, come. So, I mean, she didn't know what I was like. She just... And then at the end of the season, a friend of hers who she'd been through college through catering with, not through college, because they didn't have catering colleges then, who she'd worked with at Preston, came for a day on a day trip, and he said, I'm looking for a receptionist. He said, but I don't want that girl you've got on the desk that I saw. So she said, oh no, I wouldn't recommend her. She said, but I have another young lady who I've just trained. And she said, I think she might be suitable for you. So he said, oh right, he said, in that case, he said, ask her if she'd like to come along and see me. Well, my mother then lived at Southport, and the job was at Lytham St Anne's, so it was reasonably close, you see. And having broken away from home, and my mother said, I'm coming after a month to make sure you're not tired, to see the hotel. Well, Miss Shimon was great. She let her come and see that I was all right and said she'd look out. I was 24, but you'd have thought I was about 16. And anyhow, I went along to the Clifton Arms at Lytham, and Mr Jackson employed me, and then I met up with my husband.
I was a waiter at the time.
He was a waiter then.
Can I ask you a little bit about your family background, Mr. Burney, and how you came into the business?
My father, most of the time, worked for himself. Didn't make a lot of money, but he worked for himself most of the time. He died when he was 58, so, and they had a family fairly late. So.
What trade was he in?
General dealing and... the entertainments. He was an entertainments manager at Blackpool Pleasure Beach for the last few years. But he did a lot of trading and dealing after the war on his own account. My mother she was a manageress of a cafe restaurant in Lytham St Anne's. I went into the catering trade because I originally wanted to go into the Fleet Air and discovered my eyes weren't suitable at all. And it was suggested that catering trade was quite a good way in to get into that sort of thing. So I started training at a hotel in St Anne's.
And how old would you have been?
16.
16.
And from then on I sort of move from job to job, getting
£2.10 in the plate room, wasn't it?
Yes,
with the cutlery.
£2.10.
£2.10
a week.
In your which job was that first job, and you were washing plates.
Yes. Then I got promoted to the restaurant as a commis waiter, and I got up, so I was a commis waiter and allowed to run the stations when the other waiters were off, you see. This was a 3-star hotel, full service service, and I decided that I wasn't going to get any further there, so I moved to another place as a station waiter, full station waiter. And then I moved to another place as a head waiter for a while, and it went on from there.
You didn't have like a structured, like nowadays, if you go to catering college, you've got a structured sort of line to take, but you just had to do it very well
yourself,
didn't you?
I got accepted before I went in the forces in a catering management course at Caulfield College. I said, well, I won't do it now. I'll do my service career, get my 2 years armed services out the way,
National
come
service.
Back. And I did that. I went back, and they had changed both the, all the, more or less all the staff, senior staff there. And I went into them. I said, right, I was accepted at so-and-so on such and such a time for the management course. No, you can't have it. You've got to do so and 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 so before you'll be allowed on a management course. I said, but I have already been accepted. He says, no, you haven't. I said, thank you very much. Bye-bye. And I did it myself.
Yeah. And worked up into the trade till you had your own establishment.
That's right.
That's right.
Mm. Well, that's a very interesting and positive note to end on. Thank you very much indeed.
Pleasure.
Pleasure.